This month, the FAA issued new rules for commercial drones. This hour, the present and future of unmanned aerial systems. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Crop dusting, real estate imagery, delivering products you order online to your driveway. Are you ready for the new era of commercial drones? Joining us this hour to discuss where we are and where we're going with unmanned aerial systems, Richard Welzen, Chair of Aerospace Engineering at Iowa State University, and Van Lucas of Agritech Systems in Indianola. Join our conversation with your questions and concerns about commercial drones. First, this news from NPR. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Newly proposed commercial rules for the use of unmanned aircraft are opening doors for Iowa business. Farmers, realtors, the media, many other sorts of businesses will be affected by the coming drone revolution that's already started. This month, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, that's the federal agency tasked with regulating these unmanned flying vehicles, commonly called drones, have proposed new rules that drone operators have to follow. And in doing so, the FAA has to balance potential productivity with safety and privacy concerns. Now, the FAA's proposals will now undergo a 60-day public comment period. It's expected to take 2 or 3 years for these draft rules to become final. We want to talk about them this hour. We have guests here to tell us where we are and where we're going with commercial drones. And we also want to hear from you this hour. Are you using a drone for commercial purposes? Do you know if you're doing it legally? What questions do you have about the new rules proposed by the FAA? Now, this hour, we're not talking about the government use of drones. That's a different show we'll do in the future. So we're not talking about government surveillance using drones or weaponized drones, the military use of drones. Today, it's all about potential commercial applications. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Of course, Iowa Public Radio also on Facebook for your questions, your concerns. And you can tweet us as well, IPR Talk. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us for the entire hour, we have with us Richard Welzen. He's the chair of aerospace engineering at Iowa State University. He's in our Ames studio. Richard Welzen, welcome to our program.
Hi, Ben. Very happy to be here.
Very happy to have your expertise, you and your expertise with us this hour. Also with us in our Des Moines studio, Van Lucas. He's chief pilot and owner of Agritech Systems in Indianola. They are developing drones. Van Lucas, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben. Glad to be here. And Dr. Welzen, good to hear from you again.
Good to hear from you again, too.
Let's talk about these rules. I can read a few of them off, and then perhaps you can add to them or comment on them. So requiring drone operators to fly only during the day, maintain sight of their aircraft at all times, keep it under an altitude of 500 feet, and have to be 17 years or older and go through training and receive a certificate. Rich Welzen, talk about why these rules are coming now. We've had drones around for a few years.
Well, we had them around, but the rule for commercial use has been it can't happen. So you ask the question, is anyone flying these commercially? And except in some very, very special cases, a handful, commercial use is prohibited today. And so this is a first step forward, and the FAA is a very conservative organization because their first objective is to be safe. If you look at the statistics for flying, the worst time to have flown was in the 1960s. The accident rate and the number of fatalities from flying has consistently dropped since then.
Why the 60s? Because the plane was, of course, around since the early 20th century.
Well, I think you have two competing things. On one side, the use of aircraft has gone up, and on the other side, you're competing with that by trying to make it more safe. And so we hadn't implemented all the safety rules that we have today by the mid-60s. That's when we got serious about it. Since then, there have been quite a few programs focused on aircraft safety. I used to work at NASA, and NASA has had an aircraft safety program, an aviation safety program, actually, for probably about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things worked to our benefit and made the skies safe. And we don't want to suddenly inject UASs. I don't call them drones, and we can come back to that. But if we suddenly inject them into the airspace, we have the potential for accidents that we hadn't planned for.
Mm-hmm. So back to your analogy with the aircraft, or we could say cars, I suppose, too. This is the advent. This is the beginning of these unmanned aerial systems. Also, some of us call them drones, commonly called in popular culture. But so where are we right now? Are we in an era of aircraft in the 1920s or something?
Well, you remember back in the 20s, there was the barnstorming era, where people really didn't know much about aviation. And so the barnstormers traveled the country and basically did a number of stunts to show what these aircraft were capable of. Of course, it was very hazardous. A lot of people died in the process. But we were learning what these aircraft could do. And what changed everything, actually, was airmail. That drove modern aviation as we know it. Someone had the vision to see that we could use these aircraft to carry mail across the country. And we're sort of at that point today with the UAS. That is, right now, the only way you can legally fly this outside the government is to be a hobbyist or to get special permission for aeronautical research purposes. And so we're just scratching the surface of how these things can be applied. And we're going to step out of those barnstorming days and now into an era where companies like Vans can provide a service and use these things in a very productive way.
I want to talk to Van in a moment, but first you, Rich Wells, and what aspect are you most excited about when you look at how these unmanned aerial systems are developing?
Well, I think it's the most exciting thing that's happened in aviation in 50 years. If you look very simply at what happened, the Wright brothers started us off flying. The DC-3 in the 1920s made transport of large numbers of people possible. The jet engine that was developed in the 1940s and 50s enabled very high-speed transportation. And now the introduction of unmanned systems are going to allow a whole series of applications that we haven't even dreamed of yet.
Van Lucas, you are chief pilot and owner of Agritech Systems in Indianola, Iowa. You're also a pilot, I believe, in the Iowa Air Guard. Tell us what you're up to there at Agritech Systems. You're developing what?
Well, we're an aerial application business. That's where we got our start. And, the business has been around since 1947 in the same family for all of those years. And the business has always been on the cutting edge of technology. You know, the first to have turbine aircraft in the state. In fact, dating back to 47, the proprietor's father flew the first crop duster Stearman off of our strip back in 47. So, and that was for Laverty sprayers, and they were controlling pests on the Wallace Farms, which is now Pioneer, as everybody knows. Fast forward ahead, we end up with the turbine aircraft. We've integrated GPS and flow controls to better control the amount of pesticides that we're putting out. And now we have a new technology that's coming on board. And the technology is being introduced into our airspace that we operate in heavily in that less than 400-foot category. And our concern is the safety of these UASs and untrained personnel operating these in the airspace where we make our living.
How do they stack up against you having manned vehicles do essentially the same services, as I understand what you're talking about, crop dusting and so forth? How do you estimate the UASs that will stack up against the manned aircraft?
Well, the manned aircraft does a better job. We are not looking at the UAS to eliminate the job that a manned aircraft does. It's simply a weight issue. When you're flying in a spray plane, the weight of the aircraft is what actually pushes the pesticides into the canopy to control the targeted pest. When you're dealing with a UAS, especially with these proposed rules that are 55 pounds or less, it just does not have the canopy penetration. So we're looking at it more as a integration of being able to take some of the visual imagery, combine that with the agronomist data on the ground, and be able to map those into our man sprayers so that we can be a bigger part of the precision agriculture market that's out there. We are part of the precision agriculture market, but now we're trying to make that even better.
Mm. Okay. When I think about crop dusting, I think about the hazards of it. You have power wires and so forth. And does this offer the chance for us to improve safety there, crop dusting, because the automated systems, one, perhaps can be better than humans one day, and two, if we lose an automated system, it's not a human.
Exactly. I don't know when that'll be. I know that the technology is lagging quite a bit. There are so many points of data that take place that right now only the human brain can process all of those hazards that stack up. And there just are not sensors and processing enough that can go out there and replace the speed of the human brain reaction of the pilot that he's built over experience and training.
Okay. Will that future come? Rich Wellsen, is that in the offing in the next 5 or 10 years? They'll be as good or better than human pilots?
I don't know if it's the next 5 or 10 years, but it's inevitable. Just to give you a history of some of these aircraft, the first large UAS to fly was the Global Hawk. It is a surveillance vehicle, and it flies worldwide, and it's been flying since 1998 by the Air Force. And today we're talking about now injecting this technology into the commercial world. Probably not aware of it, but most aircraft landings at Heathrow Airport in England are autonomous. There's a fog issue there, and so the large airliners now have auto lane capability, and most landings occur hands off. In mm-hmm. fact, occasionally a pilot has to take control just to keep their training up. And we had a saying at NASA that the cockpit of the future is going to be a pilot and a dog. And the reason for the dog is to bite the pilot if they touch the controls.
Oh, I thought it was going to be to keep the pilot company.
Yeah.
Probably so, that too.
So it is going to happen, and what's driving it is the same technology that's driving our cell phones. We had a program in the late 90s imagining a small quadcopter, and that was beyond the state of the art in 1995. We didn't have the batteries. We didn't have the electric motors. We didn't have the communications. We didn't have the computer capability. And I pulled out a picture a couple weeks ago that someone had put together of their vision for the future. And what that picture looked like was a soldier holding something that looked like an iPad, communicating with something that looked a whole lot like a quadcopter. And here we are 15 years later, and you can buy them in a hobby shop.
Rich Wellsen, you are in the know. You worked for NASA. You worked at DARPA, the think tank of the Defense Department. And you sound surprised how fast it's come.
I am, because 15 years seems like yesterday. Maybe I'm just getting older, and yet everything's changed. And so I'm a little cautious about saying things aren't going to happen quickly. What's really driving everything are the cell phones.
Okay.
When we were doing this program back in the 90s, what we wanted to develop was a miniature camera. We wanted to develop new batteries. We wanted to develop miniature electric motors. And it turns out that that program was killed because cell phones were driving all three of those. Now, you might ask, what's the miniature electric motor all about? Well, that's the cell phone vibrator that shakes you when your phone rings.
Ah.
And take all that out of your phone and now put it on an air vehicle, and you've got a micro UAS.
Okay, we're talking about the commercial use of unmanned aerial systems, sometimes called drones. Richard Wellsen is chair of aerospace engineering at Iowa State University. Van Lucas, chief pilot and owner of Agritech Systems in Indianola. And before we have some other people with practical applications, we want to explore that in just a moment. But very quickly, let's answer this tweet from Sadis in Ottumwa. I'm not sure about the pronunciation of his or her name. I own a drone. What is used for commercial purpose mean? What part of flying services can I get paid for? Can I sell consulting services for field inspections, asks our tweeter.
And the short answer is none, not today. The rules are so strict that our students at Iowa State can't even fly the vehicles because the strict interpretation is that we collect tuition from the students, therefore we're like a business.
Mm.
And so under the present rules, you can't do it, unfortunately.
But if I go out in a field somewhere in town and have no commercial interest, I just buy a drone and fly it around, that's fine right now.
That's correct.
Okay. I just, no way commercial interest. But we know this happens, don't we, Rich Wilson? It's happening.
It's happened. There have been lawsuits. The lawsuits have come out ambiguously. And so I think that the challenge we're up against now is the FAA moving quickly enough to get rules in place, because we'd much rather have a usable set of rules that people can obey than rules that are so strict that everybody ignores them.
Yeah, the barnstormers are out there. They will not be held back. Let's go to Tim Hines. Tim Hines is visuals editor at the Sioux City Journal, which is considering buying an unmanned aerial system for photography. Tim Hines, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to speak with you.
So what does this offer you, the Sioux City Journal? What do you see in the future of your newspaper because of these unmanned aerial systems?
What I think we would see in the future is simply another tool in our kit to provide visual coverage of news that happens in our area, and I think that's what a lot of news organizations are currently looking at UASs for.
Mm-hmm. So in the future, your website would be something happens. We have, some kind of maybe a small disaster or some accident or something, and you would have on your website a live video feed from an unmanned aerial system?
Well, that would certainly be potential in the future. Right now, I think the way technology stands, that would be a little prohibitive, but certainly the way technology is changing, that could certainly happen. I think what most news organizations would be looking at is just a different way of illustrating some of the more commonplace things that we at the Journal would have to photograph on a daily or weekly basis.
Mm-hmm. Does this eliminate humans, or just humans are operating these things, so there's really no elimination of humans taking pictures or video?
Well, it would certainly not eliminate humans doing that job. Certainly, whoever would be operating the craft would still have to determine when, for instance, to turn on the camera or to push the button or how to maneuver
right. The
UAS to achieve a photograph or video.
So you got to have that training beforehand. What do you see, Tim Hines, as the main challenges you face in the media incorporating these UASs, unmanned aerial vehicles?
Well, the main challenges would certainly be the challenges that the media has faced, or certainly photographers and videographers have faced since day one, and that would be ensuring that proper protocols and guidance are in place. Ethical considerations would be taken up before any decision would be made as to whether or not a UAS would be an appropriate tool for whatever assignment we had at the time.
Okay, Tim Hines of the Sioux City Journal, thank you for chipping in with your perspective. Let's go to Kurt Mumm. He's president of NAI Optimum, a real estate company in West Des Moines. Kurt, are you there?
I am.
Hi. Are you using the unmanned aerial systems now?
We do. We have our second drone, which is a DJI Phantom 2 Vision.
Mm-hmm. Now, that would be technically prohibited, wouldn't it?
It is for commercial purposes.
Hmm. Okay. We'll quickly advance the questions here to what advantages you see in using drones compared to, I assume, what did you use before, airplanes?
When I got started in the real estate business back in the 90s, yeah, you would literally hire an airplane and there'd be a photographer hanging out taking pictures of different intersections and so forth. So mm-hmm. It's a lot easier than that. And again, we we don't charge for any of the photos or the video that we take. And I consider myself a hobbyist. And I guess the biggest thing is we are welcoming the rules and regulations that are coming down from the FAA just to give some people some parameters which they can operate these tools in, because they are really interesting pieces of technology, and I think it really makes real estate, and especially when you're trying to monitor and track the progress of a construction project or something, very interesting.
What are your biggest concerns? You have safety concerns, of course. You don't want to have these come down on anybody.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I'd say that's our number one. It's got to be safety, not just for the general public, but the people operating it, and you just want to make sure that it's a tool to take some pictures and some video, and safety is the biggest issue.
What about privacy? Do you have to consider that going out with drones? Let's say you are selling a piece of real estate next to where I live, and I see a drone over there. I might think that's an invasion of my privacy.
The comment is a healthy dose of common sense goes an awful long way. So we're typically not trying to video anything or take photos of anything that we don't have permission to. Obviously, the quality of the cameras, you can reach a long ways, but at the same time, I would say it's no more invasive than if there was a paparazzi with a telephoto lens somewhere trying to get a picture of somebody.
Well, that's pretty invasive. If you have someone out sunbathing in the backyard or something like that, you've got to. Kurt Mumm, very good. Thank you for your perspective. Before we go to break, I want to talk with Rich Welzen. What about those privacy concerns we're hearing from Kurt Mumm that we just discussed? Are they covered in these new rules? How do you imagine those will be regulated?
I think you're going to see some court cases, and the rules will have to happen. I'm concerned about the privacy.
What aspects particularly?
Well, photographing people in public places is allowed, but think of Google Maps, where they blur out the faces of people and they blur out license plate numbers, things like that. Particularly people involved in farming are very nervous about having someone fly an unattended vehicle over their land and photograph it. It has a great dollar value to them and to others. And so we're wrestling with that here in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Iowa State. How do you ensure that when you're photographing your property, you're not photographing your neighbor's property?
What are the possible solutions quickly?
Well, I think self-policing is one, but stricter rules will be another, where you can't show anything except your own property in this process.
Okay, we have to go to break in just a moment. Kurt Mumm and Tim Hines, thank you for your perspectives. Rich Wells, and you mentioned at the outset, you don't like them being called drones. We have a few seconds here. Why not?
Because aircraft started out in private use, and then they went to the military. But for unmanned and uninhabited vehicles, their use started in the military, and that's where the drone name came from. So they have a negative connotation.
Our association with them. Okay.
Yes.
Military connotation. Okay. We're talking about unmanned aerial systems, UASs. Some of us call them drones, and I'm sure we'll continue to call them drones. Rich Welzen is with us. He is chair of aerospace engineering at Iowa State University. Van Lucas, chief pilot and owner of Agritech Systems in Indianola. Join our conversation. Are you using a drone for commercial purposes? What questions do you have about the new rules proposed by the FAA this month? We'll be back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News after this short break. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about unmanned aerial systems, also called drones, the commercial use of them. Not talking about government use of drones, surveillance or military weaponized drones and so forth. Today, it's about commercial applications. Why? Well, this month, the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, they're tasked with regulating these unmanned flying vehicles, proposed new rules that operators will have to follow, and they'll undergo a 60-day public comment period before eventually, may take a couple of years, the draft rules will become final. So we're talking about these proposed rules with our guests today. Richard Welzen is chair of aerospace engineering at Iowa State University. Van Luke is chief pilot and owner of Agritech Systems in Indianola. They've been in this in the air for many years, decades, and are looking to move into the use of these unmanned aerial systems. I'd love to have you join our conversation. Are you using a drone for commercial purposes? Shame on you. I guess that's technically not allowed right now. Only hobby use of it. But we're talking with people this hour who actually are using them already. What questions do you have about the new rules proposed by the FAA? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Rich Welzen of Aerospace Engineering at Iowa State University. Your students, you mentioned, are at work doing this. So where are they going in their career after they graduate in aerospace engineering at Iowa State University? This opens up a huge new opportunity, doesn't it?
We're really excited about that. As an aerospace department, in the past, our graduates would go off to places like Boeing in Seattle or Rolls-Royce in Indianapolis. And with the exception of Rockwell Collins and United Technologies, there aren't a lot of jobs for them in state. But we see a future where these UAS will be a big part of agriculture in the state of Iowa. We see a lot of use for observing crops, for crop dusting, for pest control. And what we'd really like to see is the more entrepreneurial students start up companies to build and operate these vehicles. And our estimate is the market for this is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it will impact the economy of Iowa? To what extent and how?
Well, it's all about productivity of the farmland. And the folks here in agriculture are looking exactly at that issue. One of the questions is, can you get a picture of a recent planting within a few weeks of planting to see what portion is sprouting and what portion isn't, and go in and take remedial action? And you can't do this with a satellite picture. You have to come down very close, actually look at individual plants. And we did an estimate of how much data is needed to do that. You have to pull in the equivalent of all that is put on Facebook in a year to get a picture of Iowa that's sufficiently detailed to make the decisions you need to make to increase productivity.
Okay. Rich, as if you were reading right from my notes, we have a person who can speak more specifically to that. Rob Sladek is agronomy supervisor at Johnson Family Farms. That's in rural Johnson County. Rob Sladek, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you are working in a large agricultural business in Johnson County. You've been operating a drone?
Yeah, we have. We purchased one about a year ago now, and we got to use it through an entire growing season this past year.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, you just hooked up with us just a minute or so ago. Rich Welzen was describing the advantages it offers to people in the ag industry. Do you see those? What are the chief advantages you see going forward?
I think that for us, it initially started as an easy gimmick, more or less. Does it have value agriculturally? We didn't know that, but for the cost, the gate to entry was fairly low. So we got involved, and as the year went on, we started to see a lot of what Rich was talking about as I joined, as far as can you get low enough to actually attain usable data agronomically. And I think that we saw that we certainly can. And like I said, it's not a $20,000 decision. So we used it several times for things that we didn't even think we were going to when we started it to make the decision to purchase it. So I think overall we find great value in it so far.
Mm-hmm. So you've had it about a year. How much did you invest?
I think the kit, I mean, it comes as an entire kit, and we got the one that was recommended by several other people in the ag industry, and it was about $3,000, I think.
And looking back a year later, you said it's been worth it already to your bottom line.
Yeah. We do a lot with our landowners, and it started as a way to capture our processes through the entire year, more or less taking video to show customers or landowners their own fields and the process of how we go through a whole year from spring to summer to fall. And it gives a bird's eye view of a lot of our operations that you can't get anywhere else. And then once we started getting into the heavy scouting time period of the year, that's when we really started seeing things like we had early spring, we had a lot of water damage. And to be able to go to the edge of the road where you couldn't even get in the field because it was too wet, launch the UAV up in the air and survey an entire 100-and-some-acre field in 2 minutes, I mean, you can't replace that.
That sounds fascinating. So there is a wow factor. You farm other people's land, and you get to show them like something like a Hollywood movie, a little bit of their land and the way it develops over the seasons. There's the wow factor, but also the practical part of getting to that part of the field that has some water problems. What are your biggest concerns, Rob Sladek, hazards that you've discovered in the year using that drone?
I don't want people to get confused and assume that it replaces boots on the ground, because it doesn't. We use it as an initial step, much like you'd use satellite imagery or something along those lines. And then you still have to send somebody out to verify what you've seen and to do a more in-depth appraisal. And so I would caution that people might use it as a sole use of scouting, which I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm. Have you been paying attention to these FAA rules that have been proposed?
I very, very little,
okay.
Just because we've been quite busy. But I my understanding is it was looser than a lot of people thought it might be, which I guess if that's the case, I think that's positive for the use in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Does this give you a future visions? Are you a sort of a futurist farmer? You're a young man, Rob.
I find it interesting that you see the videos of those larger drones in Japan spraying rice fields with pesticides, and to think that could someday happen here, albeit a long ways off in the future, I think. But if that kind of activity continues to happen, I think that's business altering, I guess, as far as what you're going to be able to do scale-wise.
You're excited. You get to live through this revolution.
I think every generation has their ahas and their changes in technology, and I think we're definitely slated for our share of them.
Okay, Rob Sladek of Johnson Family Farms in Johnson County. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Van Lucas of Agritech Systems, you're a pilot. You mentioned before in the first half hour concerns. So under these new rules, you think it's a good idea the FAA says you have to have training? Do you have to have a pilot's training? What are you seeing there?
Well, I've got the overall notes here for the proposed rulemaking, and that's the big thing that we need to get across here, is that it's proposed. So the actual rules that are out there, I've heard a couple of times guys saying they're using these. Right now, the only way you can legally use these is if you have a FAA-approved 333 exemption, or you operate under a COA, or you are a hobbyist. The FAA has defined that commercial use. They use an example. If a farmer goes out and flies his field, his own crops, and intends to sell those crops and uses that imagery to help him with his yield, then that is considered commercial use.
Right, but we also heard it's the Wild West in our historical narrative there. Who's out there policing? There aren't many sheriffs or marshals, are there?
Well, the FAA has recently tried to empower local law enforcement, so you will see some action from local law enforcement. And in fact, at our stakeholders meeting, we had several representatives there from the law enforcement community, and the FAA team was also there as well. But I would say the bigger issue, even though it's Wild West, we tell a lot of our growers and co-ops that we work for, is the liability hazard. Every policy or insurance policy out there has an exclusive aviation exclusion. So you have to have an aviation policy to be covered for flying those UASs. So you're exposing your whole company.
Your UAS, your unmanned vehicle comes down on someone's car, or God forbid, on someone's head, you're not covered.
Correct. And your whole company is exposed. And the operator personally as the pilot.
Okay, Van Lucas, very good to point that out. We want to go to callers in just a moment. You have a question about the use of unmanned aerial systems for commercial purposes. 1-866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or talk to us, leave a message or a question on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Rich Welzen, I want to pose this to you. Our hour is getting away from us. You mentioned you worked for NASA, you worked for DARPA, the Defense Department's think tank there. Now you have an idea of how fast these things can progress, and how, even though you were working for NASA, the Defense Department at that time, 15, 20 years ago, you were still surprised by how fast it's come. Give us a way out vision, something that we might be able to barely imagine today that will be, you think, commonplace in the near future.
So I'll use the agriculture example. And the statement was made, you can't replace boots on the ground, and that's very much true today. But imagine now a fleet of vehicles, and we've been actually looking at this at Iowa State, vehicles that might look like lighter than airships, like blimps, that carry smaller UAS systems in and could release a number of these, explore a large section of farmland, because you know half the area, the surface area of the United States is farmland. Release all these vehicles, gather all the data, and then even drop small sensors into the ground where you have a problem so that you're doing this massive diagnosis of how fields are growing.
Mm-hmm. That's
just one example.
Our landscape, our skyscape of the future, are we to believe that the horizon will be near and far to wherever we are in most places littered with these things buzzing around from a foot long to an inch long to the size of, I don't know, a regular aircraft?
I wouldn't go that far, at least not right now. You know, the science fiction people talk about things like that. There are people talking about home delivery. But again, the issue of liability was raised. Imagine a home delivery system that's carrying a 10-pound carton that it drops from 500 feet.
Yeah.
You've got a problem. And until we solve some really sticky technical problems, I don't see that happening soon.
Okay. Let's talk to Ryan Guthridge. He's a pilot for Top Intel, which offers aerial imagery services. Ryan, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Ryan. Coming up on the end of our hour, but so what's in store? Are you using aerial drones right now?
We definitely have them in our business model. So today we specialize in the collection and processing of aerial imagery for the agriculture industry. But as the FAA has laid out, you know, we can't use drones for commercial purposes. So today we're using manned aircraft.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what impact do you see? What are you most excited about as we enter this era of unmanned aerial systems?
Well, definitely what's the most exciting is putting the capability in the end user's hands, whether that's crop consultants, insurance adjusters, or even the farmers themselves, allowing them to go out and survey their own fields. It reduces that turnaround time. Rather than calling up somebody to go fly their field, they can... that would normally take about a day to turn around the processed imagery. You know, now we're talking a matter of hours.
You're much more efficient. You could potentially even stream that within minutes, couldn't you?
Yeah, potentially.
Hmm. Okay, what are you most concerned about as you think about these proposed FAA rules?
Well, definitely, the newest rules are a little bit more lax than we originally thought. But, you know, the FAA will do their due diligence and open up for public commentary. So what we see lately probably won't be exactly what we see when the final rules come out. But the concern there being is that, nothing replaces good quality training, whether it's drones or aircraft. And going up and collecting the data, you still have to be able to interpret the imagery or interpret the video that you're streaming down. So.
Okay. Ryan Guthridge, pilot for Top Intel, that is in the business of offering aerial imagery services. Where are you based there, Ryan?
We're based out of Honey Creek, Iowa.
Okay. Very good. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Let's go to Ralph in Grinnell. Ralph, are you there?
Yep.
You dialed 1-866-780-9100. What's your concern?
So what happens if you've got a competitor that doesn't like the product line you're raising, and they want to bring in some pathogens or disease and, say, possibly drop it on your crop of curly kale or whatever?
Wow.
Would I be able to take my shotgun and legally go out and disable the thing?
You might be able to do that with a pellet gun or a paintball gun, but yeah, okay. We get the point. Ralph, Rich Wells, and what do you think of that question?
Well, I think we're getting to a point where it's not even going to be a shotgun, but you're going to own your own vehicle that goes in and takes other vehicles down. I mean, I think that's another inevitable thing.
So that you go up and protect your property with your fleet of unmanned aerial systems?
I think something like that's on the horizon, absolutely.
And so, oh, I can picture it now. The picture, we talked about the paparazzi earlier, and they have these vast estates on the West Coast, for instance, and they will have their fleet there protecting their property so that they can sunbathe in peace and quiet.
The real question, I think, and I'm not a legal person, is who owns the airspace over your property and at what altitude?
And what is, you can't answer that.
I don't have an answer to that, no.
Mm, okay. Anne is joining us from Waukee. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine. What's on your mind as we discuss these commercial unmanned aircraft?
Well, one of my major concerns, and I never hear this addressed anywhere, is we don't live here by ourselves. We live here with a lot of creatures, you know, the birds in particular, the bats, the ground animals. And I never hear anybody talk about what danger it can impose on the birds, for instance.
Mm, okay, good point. And Rich, something to say about that?
Well, I remember distinctly in about the year 2000, we saw an early demo of one of these things, and a hawk came down and took it down. And there's actually a video, I think, on YouTube of exactly that happening.
I have seen it. Attacked a drone and actually took it down.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think one of the issues that's come up in the micro version, this is the 4.5-pound and less vehicle, is that the vehicle be frangible, meaning that it falls apart easily. And I think that's really, really, really an important characteristic, so that if it falls from the sky, it can't hurt you because it breaks into pieces. But similarly, if it interacts with an animal of some sort, that it also not harm them. Mm. The most hazardous part of these is the spinning propellers, and there are ways to make those propellers that they're so that they're not as dangerous.
Van Lucas, is this something you're concerned with, the effect on wildlife?
Well, obviously, wildlife and aircraft never mix, we do our best to avoid any impact to the wildlife that is not the target of our flight. So, I think for the most part, in my aviation experience, birds tend to fly out of the way. They typically dive down whenever they encounter an aircraft. So. I think that kind of the natural instincts of the wild animals will prevail.
All right. It's interesting, though, when you have something that's a foot long or 2 feet long, what an eagle, what a hawk, any other kind of bird actually thinks of this new thing flying across. Well, we've had the remote-controlled airplanes for a while. And great question from Waukee. Let's go to Mark in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. My question is, I own a video production company in eastern Iowa, and one of the things that I'm concerned about as someone that we have a hexacopter, but we don't fly it commercially yet because we're just not exactly sure what's going to happen, is the training. And who are the people that are going to train these people for these licenses? And how is that going to happen? Because I think there's just going to be an onslaught of people trying to get these licenses, and they're just going to be backlogged.
Mm. Van Lucas, you're a pilot. Do you know?
Well, right now it's self-policing, as Dr. Wellsen talked about. We are currently in the process of setting up a national maintenance and training facility at our operation in Indianola to start working with our local FISDO office. We've been working with the FAA, the local office here, for a while and just trying to answer some of those questions and how that training will go. And like with any aircraft out there, you have to have specific training on that model, so many hours before you're qualified to fly that particular type of aircraft.
Rich Wellsen, can you add to that? We're coming up to the end of our hour, but I read, did I not, that you can actually go online and get a certificate under these proposed rules?
Yeah, the small UAS will only require a basic aeronautics test, and that will have to be done every 2 years. So
a real test or online?
Probably online. I don't know the details of it because it's a proposal, but it's not. You don't have to be qualified as a pilot. You just have to show that you understand basic principles.
Mm, okay. Okay. We've got a minute or so left. Rich, I wanted you to give us more of what's in your head as far as the pictures. Thank you very much, Mark in Cedar Rapids. Sorry. Rich, what's in your head? Because you've had so much experience going back a decade or two on this, about what our lives will be like, how they will be impacted, our society.
Again, I think you can use the cell phone as an example. Think about cell phones 20 years ago. They didn't really exist very much, or they were the size of a brick, and now look where they are. And I think you're going to see the same thing with these air vehicles. Imagine there's an accident on the side of the road, and you have to fly in a safety a first aid kit. And instead of trying to get an ambulance there, this thing flies in on a UAS and lands by the side of the road, and there's a defibrillator on board.
Amazing.
Or even going further, you don't take an ambulance out to the site. A vehicle flies in, you load someone on it, and it autonomously flies back to the hospital.
Amazing.
Those are the sorts of things we're going to see in our not-too-distant future.
Richard Welzin, Chair of Aerospace Engineering at Iowa State University. Van Lucas, Chief Pilot and Owner of Agritech Systems in Indianola. Van and Richard, thank you so much for the vision of the future and the concerns of the present connected with unmanned aerial systems. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines. Garrett Van Leeuwen helped us out in Ames. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, it's Politics Day. We'll talk about the immigration. Also, an update on that battle in Congress over a bill that would reverse the president's immigration order. Tomorrow, Politics Day. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.